While that's loading, I'll just say good morning and thank you to our organizers for what really looks to be a great session. And hopefully we can kind of synthesize some things through this. And I particularly appreciate your emphasis on experimental work coupled with modeling, which has been something that we've been doing for a little while in ARS. So in this talk, I'll give you a little history of our site. We're looking at conversion of a wheat fallow system in Colorado to a mixed perennials under their Conservation Reserve Program. I'll just highlight Rob Erskine in particular has done a lot of the data collection with me. He's worked with me for almost 20 years in ARS. Next slide. So this is really a global phenomenon that we're paying for ecosystem services in the USDA. We have the NRCS here and we have Conservation Reserve Program. And on selective fields, farmers can basically stop growing their crop, plant a prescribed mix of grasses and legumes and things, and then things get better. We've observed immediately the ecology in terms of large mammals coming in. You see reduced erosion. So there's an apparent benefit, but to my knowledge, it's very rarely quantified, and it's difficult because we don't have the background data. So that's kind of where I'm going in this talk, is that we've done previous monitoring on this site because we were studying spatial variability and soil water processes on a cropped field. So I'll show you, it has strips. We've done simulations with our agricultural ecosystem services model. And then now we have essentially what's happening with this transition is an unplanned experiment. So our field site in Colorado, try to get in front of the mic, is semi-arid. It's a small watershed defined by our runoff flume at the edge of the field. And as I said, we have a history since about 2001 of taking various measurements spatially and temporally, and then have used integrated those with our watershed model, which I'll describe. So for context, here we are in the U.S., the 48 states, and these are HUC 8 watersheds. So just to point out that this is a watershed on the eastern slope of the Rocky Mountains. And this watershed is the Cache la Poudre. See if I can point. In the middle?
The center point.
Yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't think it works. That's okay.
No, it works.
Oh, okay. Good. So just to show you, so I'll be zooming into our farm, but it's in the context of a watershed, a large watershed, which goes up to the Continental Divide, flows across the urban corridor. I-25 is, I guess, in here, and then out to the South Platte River. So there's our farm, kind of not contiguous, but there's a farm and there's Fort Collins. So within that, we have, this is our field here, which I'll zoom into, but we have a smaller scale watershed. You can see 10 kilometers. And in this slide, if you can see, the lighting could be a little better maybe for people to see, but there are some irrigated fields, and we're really kind of on the boundary of irrigated and non-irrigated. So these are primarily rain-fed, cropped, and then you see rangeland further up. So it's a transition, and this watershed is an intermittent stream, and there's actually another proposal for an NSF project on some streams like this in the area. So this is our farm scale. And this is our wheat fallow field. So zooming in, again, thank you for the lights, because on this slide it will help you to see. When I started on this, it was cropped in wheat and fallow strips. These are about 120 meters. You can see some drainage that there, just from aerial photo, there are some drainage lines, but there was no apparent runoff. We weren't even sure if we would see runoff because it's fairly dry. And the other thing you see are these artifacts. So we started in 2001. But 1998, I believe, these strips were brought in after a previous CRP program. And prior to that, it was cropped with north-south strips. So I learned this from the farmer after we started. But it's just interesting to see the history, the legacy of land use that you can see just from aerial photos. So this is a digital map of the topography, 5-meter resolution, survey grade. And from that, we can derive potential flow paths. These are contributing area map, just so you can get kind of a 3D view. It exaggerates. It doesn't look like streams out there. It's a farm field. But we took two transects, and that's where we installed primarily our moisture probes. And then we also have, these are the Centec probes. So these are capacitance-based probes, and they're fully buried. So the farmer could drive over. We had an agreement that he wouldn't till below a certain depth. Let me check my time here. And then this just gives you a broader view of the watershed. So this has the soils on it, which will be important for how we delineate the landscape. And just pointing out that we do have other instruments, like we have two energy balance towers. We recently installed two cosmic ray probes. So I won't be showing you those data, but those are in the context of this study, too. So water dynamics. We have one probe that has 10 depths. So I'm going to show you an example of the kind of dynamics we see in soil moisture. So at the top, we have, this is back from 2003, for 3 years. This shows cumulative precipitation. So we're in that range, 300 to 400. Some years, these were fairly dry years. We have two probes, E1 and E2. And just to focus on the one that we have 10 depths, what you can see is we started out with a very dry soil profile. This year, we had a meter of snow in Fort Collins. And that resulted in, between snow and rain, penetration of the wetting front. But you can see down at 1.5 meters, it still wasn't responding much. This is just a very dry system. Another year where it started a little wetter, then we see the wetting front moving deep. So that gives you an idea of the dynamics that we're observing. And typically in these kinds of agricultural fields, for our models, we tend to assume one-dimensional flow. And part of the hypothesis of this whole study is that there is lateral movement, although it may be unsaturated. This is just to show you the soil moisture with cosmos or cosmic ray. They have a weighted function of diameter, but the footprint is approximately that large. So we installed a runoff flume. We actually installed a couple. The first one got completely swamped and covered with sediment. So this one is called a drop box weir, which is self-scouring. And it really behaves quite well. You can see tillage behind there. And this was prior to, well, there had been flow with the previous flume. But we do get strong convective summer storms in Colorado. So really, the rainfall intensity creates thresholds for runoff. And we got more than we expected. So this, the flume, if you can see, it actually did quite well. But the wing walls were completely wiped out. So these were supposed to contain the flow. So we do have some big events. So the question is, can we model this with an agricultural model that also handles the hydrology? So we've been working on this AGES model, which its unique feature compared with SWOT. It's derived partially from SWOT, based on the J2000 model out of Germany. It does the hydrology between hydrologic response units that can flow in any direction. They can diverge or converge. And I won't go through this in detail, but this is a flow chart. At a single HRU, we have plant growth modeled with an EPIC-based model, similar to what's in SWOT, if you're familiar with that. You have the land management for tillage, fertilizer, the planting, harvest. And then you have kind of a layered hydrology and this conceptual runoff with overland and then interflow and even groundwater. Now, on our site, we basically don't have groundwater because of the dryness. So just for example, this is the drilling into the hydrology, or the process layered soil water is the code name. I'll show you one of the processes. So it's not a physically based model like a Richard equation. It's a response function model. And we published this for the one-dimensional flow recently. So this shows you by adjusting this one parameter, you make the large pore storage out. So the amount that drains out of that layer divided by the amount stored in that layer is a function of the soil water content. And this is just to show you the range of capability to adjust parameters. So you have to be careful with these parameters. In the previous study, something that we're actually just submitting, we looked at what's the effect of the delineation of the land unit. So you have this watershed. You can divide it in many ways. So the first thing is, just using topography and land use, we come up with the strip boundaries, and the model divides the flow accordingly. In the second case, we added the soil units. This is a second order soil survey. So you start to see you get some things happening downslope, which are probably important. And then in the third one, we actually delineated further based on where we had moisture probes. So in this study, I'm only going to show you the 51, for what we actually did. I will show you some other ones too. So just for example, this is at our top Centec probe depth, some maps of what's simulated under, this is a relatively dry, so it's down in this area. We have an average, which is actually not that different from dry, water content, and then a relatively wet date up here. So you can see that the model captures the strips because of the crop growth model in there, and it also captures something to do with the soils, and then later I'll show you how it captures runoff. So in this study, just to summarize that, we had two things going on. We're looking at the mean, root mean squared difference between measured soil water content in each layer, and then we averaged across probes depending on how many probes were in each of those delineations. So this is 27, 51, and 58 that I showed you. And again, we'll focus on using the 51. We have spatial parameter complexity. So when we calibrated it, we chose to do it with all parameters uniform in space. Then we did layered, but horizontally uniform. Then we did by HRU, so we have horizontal but vertically uniform, which might be commonly used in a watershed model. This method, we just adjust by the vertical, so it's a kind of a hybrid of those two. And finally, we did a full 3D. And what you see is when you don't have that resolution, it didn't make much difference. But as we went to higher resolution in space, we start to see the reward of a better parameterization. And then this is just one case where, to compare those three, you can say, well, how did they upscale? If you look at the average over the whole watershed, they perform fairly similarly. There's something funny going on with our 27 here, but I just wanted to point out that the upscale water content is kind of within the measurement error zone.
3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. So these are, I'll focus on these here. So we calibrate saturated hydraulic conductivity, and then we simulate overland flow. This is the overland flow, and what you see here is we do get a slope effect. So we accumulate slope, water down slope, and so a bulkier model doesn't do as well on runoff. So getting to our conservation reserve program effects, then we ran it. Initially, those results were based only on the data up to about the end of 2008. And because it's a daily model, we don't expect it at this smaller scale to do very well with runoff, but we matched, I think, 8 out of 13 events fairly well. We get some false positives, so the dots are the observed. They're actually estimated on some dates. We computed a runoff coefficient based on all the events we actually measured and then estimated these. So they're not, I didn't want to get too quantitative on the comparison, but you just see how it does in here. And then we get to the one set of strips was planted in April 2013, another in May 2014. So this is kind of a transition period. We're still seeing, during that summer of 14, we see some runoff. But after that, we observe no runoff. So the change in land use really affects the runoff in this landscape. But our model, because we didn't reparameterize it, this is assuming you calibrate here, it keeps producing runoff. This is just to show you a little more compared to simulated versus observed runoff. And basically, in the small runoff area, we either produce runoff when there is no runoff, or we don't produce the low ones. But we kind of, because we calibrated to both moisture and runoff in the end, capture some of this behavior. So in terms of the model internals, this is just to show you some things. We have through-fall, we have interception. You see the interception bump up. Well, that's because now you have perennials covering the whole field the whole year. So instead of averaging the ones without interception, the interception goes up. Likewise, this is a little bit misleading, I'll say. Because these years we only had essentially half the field covered, it's not quite half, you see it go up and down. We're looking at average over the watershed. So this bump up in stresses, temperature stress and water stress, is an average over the field. But it does affect the moisture in those fallow strips. So concluding, there are long-term measurements, both spatially and temporally, and these are essential for our understanding and for doing these types of simulation. The conversion to perennial grasses essentially eliminated our observed runoff so far. We've had a pretty big intense runoff this summer with rainfall with no runoff. But the model, without recalibrating that period, which we're about to do, doesn't capture that. And then, so finally, the transient infiltration model parameters are needed, and we actually have that capability in the model, which some don't, to make some periods of time have one set of physical property parameters. To wrap up, we are looking at using the cosmic ray sensor, and further exploring, we've been looking at soil moisture in all of those CENTEC probes, and it's not a real clear trend in soil moisture, but as you look deeper, there is some trend. And then finally, looking at subdaily time scale to capture infiltration.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah. Did we run the model continuously? Yes. The one feature I didn't mention and what we're doing now is you can run it and save your state. So all the state variables in the model are saved, and I chose a period during that transition and then restart with another set of parameters. There's two ways you can do it. You can either dynamically input temporal parameters, or you can just save that state and only run the rest of it if you're recalibrating the end. Similar to root zone, right?
Any other questions? Okay, well, if that's not the case, let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you very much. Okay.